Drew McIntyre here from WWE. Wielding the Claymore can be a life of chaos. When I'm not dominating in the ring, Chumba Casino is how this warrior takes a wee break. With hundreds of online social games and new weekly releases, there's always something fresh to try. And those daily boosts, next level. Even my free time feels like Valhalla. So when life feels like a battle, kick up your feet, have some fun, and let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
This year, experience the NHL playoffs your way. Want to watch a single? Do or die Game 7, a full week of heavy-hitting back-and-forth series. Then check out Sling's 1-3 and 7-day passes. Watch the Chase for the Cup on ESPN and TNT, starting as low as $4.99. No long-term contracts or overpaying. Just live hockey at home or when you want it. Sling lets you do that. Visit sling.com to learn more.
D-Mace, Finnegan, and Donick, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you, joined on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, by Sportsnet, NHL Insider, Elliot Freeman, presented by Old National Bank. Get old. Elliot, when I saw you tweet last night that the Predators and Penguins had made a deal, Tommy Novak and Luke Shen, for Michael Bunting and a fourth-round pick, it was a bit of a head-scratcher for me. Can you explain the rationale behind this move from both teams' perspectives?
Well, I think... Hold on one second. What happened to my car play here? So I think for you guys, it's simply, Adam, that you guys want to make a change. As we all know... It's a situation where you guys have not been happy with your mix, and I think that's simply it. There had been some interest in Shen. There had been some interest in Novak. Novak last year, you'll remember, there was a lot of interest in him, but ultimately you guys decided to keep him, right?
Yes.
So I think that you guys just kind of went back and looked and saw who else was out there. And Bunting, like, Pittsburgh had just about everybody available, right? So I think that you guys are looking for a different mix, Adam. And, you know, I like Michael. He's an edgy guy. He plays hard. I bet you guys just wanted some energy, some different energy.
So by making this trade, the Predators free up $1.75 million in cap space. Could you see this move as a precursor to something else between now and the deadline tomorrow afternoon for the Predators?
Yeah, I think so. I think that, Barry's open. He's been pretty open about it. Like, everybody knows what he wants to do. So I don't think you guys are done. I don't think you guys are done by any stretch of the imagination. I think you have to be ready for anything.
Do you think that could involve just moving players out, or do you think a young player perhaps could be coming in for the future?
I think you have to be prepared for anything. I really do. Like, I know that it's a boring answer, and you're hoping for something a little more in depth, but like, I got to tell you, I think Barry has indicated that he's not. Look, it's been a disappointing season. Nobody's happy with the way it went down. I'll say this, that one came out of left field. When someone sent me the note that one was happening, I was like, really? Like I was like, that's not one I was expecting. So I just don't know how you can't be prepared for Trotz to do just about anything.
Switching gears here for a moment, you had an update last night at Sportsnet.ca regarding Mikko Rantanen. He is the player everybody is wondering about between now and tomorrow afternoon. You wrote yesterday, according to multiple sources, the Hurricanes are doing their due diligence, checking out potential returns as either a rental or with an extension, assuming he's willing to sign anywhere. before July 1st. What more can you tell us about this story since you wrote that update last night?
I think it's still going on. I'll say this. I think there's two things. Sorry, Adam. I was just, as you could tell, I was a little distracted there, and I've got this all sorted out. But I think that I think there's two things at play here, Adam. Number one, where is he willing to sign? And number two, is there really a rental deal that makes any sense for Carolina? If he's willing to sign somewhere, I think there's the possibility Carolina could get some good packages in return. But if it's simply rental, and I think there's teams out there interested in rentals, but what kind of rental package is going to interest the Hurricanes? Now, I'll say this. As a rental, he's $2.3 million. Almost anybody at 50% retained, almost anyone can do it. I think that would drive up the price. I think there are some teams that can't sign him that would love to get him as a rental. So I think that would drive up the price a bit. But really, is there anything rental-wise that would make the Hurricanes do it? I think the key is, will he sign somewhere? And I think the answer is yes. I wonder about teams like Dallas. If the answer is yes, maybe LA, though I heard it was unlikely. If the answer is yes, I think there's a good trade out there that can be made.
Elliot Friedman is with us, and I know, Elliot, you're constantly looking to see what's going on around the league and in real time as you talk to us, so we appreciate you coming on here during this crazy 24-hour period that's not going to end until 2 o'clock tomorrow our time. So I guess 25 hours, the next 25 will be crazy. I want to ask you about Novak. And now that Novak is, they're moving on, right? They have come to the conclusion in their mind that he's not the answer at the price he is. I was thinking they might ride it out and have him just say, look, he's not a second line center, but can he be a good sneaky source of offense at 3.5? That's debatable. But they've now moved on. So my question for you is, with the extra cap space that they have, specifically, you've mentioned guys like Casey Mittelstadt and Dylan Cousins. I don't know if there's any other centers that would sort of fit that mix. Do you think that they could be now in the mix to look at specifically those type of guys?
Yeah, I think so. Like, Casey Mittelstadt's an interesting guy. Now, the problem is, if you're in Nashville, you've seen him up close. And, like, you take a look at the challenge he had this year, or last couple years, they wanted to make him their 2C, right? And it didn't work, Willie. So how comfortable do you feel that it's going to work any better in Nashville than it did in Colorado?
That would be the question. Your scouts would have to tell you that Mittelstadt is a lot better than Novak, but it's like everybody else, right? You get a new set of strengths and weaknesses, and time would tell. But this is the problem. Like, everybody right now is going back through all the moves that Barry Trotz has made. He was red hot last year. This year it hasn't gotten nearly as well, and so now everybody's like, well, what next?
Well, I think the thing is, I think that. Like, the deal yesterday, that's like a low-risk deal to me. It's like, hey, we need to shake up. You need to shake up. Like, Bunting plays hard. He drives people crazy sometimes, but he plays hard. I really like him. I can see why you guys would take a shot at him. It makes sense to me. And you know what? So I look at that, like, maybe... Like, look, like, you guys have traded guys this year like Tomasino, Parsonen. They didn't fit with you, me, and other people are like, oh, maybe they'll fit with us better. And that's probably the kind of thing you're looking at now, is there somebody else out there who doesn't fit as well with us that, or with them, that we can make it work. So I can see you looking at Mittelstadt. The danger about a guy like Casey Mittelstadt is that, like I said, it didn't work for him behind MacKinnon. How comfortable are you that it's going to be better with you?
What about Cousins, who has a longer term and a higher number, but is younger And, of course, you spent a lot of time on your podcast, I know, talking about the mysteries of Buffalo, right, where they draft high. They've got a lot of guys that look promising at one point or another. Mittelstadt used to be in that category. And then they seem to go other places and blossom. So what's the latest with Cousins, and how would you compare Cousins as somebody that Barry Trotz might hone in on in comparison to Mittelstadt?
Well, yeah, I think he would be absolutely all over Cousins. I do. I don't see why. First of all, he's signed. He's still young. He's shown a lot of promise. Here's the problem. Buffalo wants NHL players in return for Cousins, impactful ones. Do you see a match?
If I'm Buffalo, probably not.
Yes.
I think they have a lot of assets. They've got prospects, but I don't think there's an NHL guy.
Deal. They're not doing a picks and prospect deal for Cousins. They're not doing that.
So so you have to have somebody that could help them immediately if you want to get in
right now. Right now.
Tommy Novak could have been that guy, perhaps, as part of it. But
well, what that says to me, guys, is that Barry probably asked them. Like, I can't imagine he would have traded Tommy Novak to Pittsburgh in that deal if he had any inkling that Tommy Novak would have been acceptable for the Sabres.
Right.
That says to me that he pitched it. It wasn't what Buffalo wanted, and he went in a different direction.
What do you think the market looks like now? We noticed that Nico Sturm was traded. There's a fourth line center. You categorized the centers really well last week. In that you've got your skilled centers, Mittelstadt, Cousins, guys like that, and then you've got those workman-like guys that could be a piece on a winning team. So what do you think the market is looking like right now for Michael McCarron and Colton Sissons?
Probably something similar to that. Well, Sissons has term, right? So
he's got 1 year left, and McCarron has 1 year left as well.
Right. I got to think Sissons, I would think the price for Sissons is a little bit higher. I'll say this, guys, like, if you would have told me this morning Brian Dumoulin was going for a second and a prospect, I don't think I would have believed that. I would think the market for McCarron and Sissons is a little bit higher than what Sturm went for this morning. But I'll say this, it's a seller's market out there. The one thing is, like, the teams are going to go after, Scott Laughton now, he's going for a first rounder. After what Tampa did yesterday with Seattle, that's a first rounder. So you've got to, I don't think McCarron and Sissons are going for that, but I think it's probably higher than what Sturm just went for.
Hmm. One other thing that's happened.
The thing is there's about six or seven of these guys, right? Now, some of them are starting to come off the market. Sturm is gone. But there's Suter in Vancouver. There's Bjugstad in Utah. Although he's not playing tonight, they're saying he's sick. We'll see. The problem is that you can probably have your pick of these kinds of guys. So you're like Florida, they don't have a lot of assets. Sturm's a really good player. They probably just said, like, that's about as much as we can afford to pay.
Here's one thing that has happened since we started talking to you. The waivers came down, and Jacob Vrana.
I was so distracted, I was trying to type them all out.
Yeah. So Jacob Vrana, it's interesting. Jordan Osterley has been claimed by the Predators, who need bodies of defensemen. Osterley actually scored a goal in Boston the other night against the Predators, and now he'll be playing for the Predators, probably not tonight. So he's a journeyman guy. Jacob Vrana is the other guy they just claimed. He's a little bit more intriguing. Yep. Not too long ago.
And was coached by Barry Trotz in Washington.
Yes, he was coached by Barry Trotz.
Yes.
And correct me if I'm wrong, he has a cup with Barry Trotz in the prime
he
of his career.
He scored
his peak.
The Stanley Cup winning. No, he didn't score the Stanley Cup winning goal. He scored a big goal, but it wasn't the cup winner.
He had 25-goal season there and has really fallen on hard times. What's happened to him? He's changed addresses a ton since then. Why has he not been a fit in the next phase of his career?
Well, you know, I'll say this. He's been through some challenges. He was in the program a little bit, and luckily he's in a better place now. So I think there was that. I'm glad to see that he's back and he's healthy, and he's doing very well. You know what? I think that unfortunately, I just think that his play fell off. I really like Jacob as a person. I'll tell you a story about him. When they won the Stanley Cup that year, when they won game four, they were up 3-1. They had 2 days off before they had to go back to Vegas. And the first day off, I went to the Capitals practice, and every regular was off. Nobody skated except for Vrana. And I went up to him, and I said, every regular who played last night is off. Why are you out here? And he said, I can't score. I need to practice. I have to be able to score. And he went out in game five and he scored a big goal. I always remembered that. Whenever I see him, we've always kind of joked about that. Look, unfortunately, it hasn't worked out as well for him lately. His play has fallen off. Some of it, I think, is a little bit of pace. The game got faster. He had a bit of a challenge sometimes. He's a great kid. I hope it works out for him. That's like, Nashville taking a chance. And I'll say this too about the Predators, and this is one of the things I really like about your organization. They've always been great for guys who've battled things off the ice to come back and try and make it. And I really like the facts that the fact that you guys do that.
Elliot, before we let you go, the Los Angeles Rams are known to have popularized the term F them picks when they won their Super Bowl. The Tampa Bay Lightning are doing the exact same thing.
Yes.
You mentioned the Seattle Kraken. They're here in Nashville tonight to face the Predators. They traded Yanni Gourde and Oliver Bjorkstrand to the Lightning. They get 2 first-round picks back. And I appreciate the fact that Julien Brisebois, the GM of the Lightning, realizes that if this team is going to be good, those first-round picks are going to be late first-round picks. Not all first-round picks are created equal. He's going for it. What do you make of what the Lightning have been able to do and what they have done at the deadline?
I say this. I think you can always do that when you're a destination. Not every team can do that. Like Tampa knows, great weather, no state tax, excellent organization, players always willing to play there. He can do that. If he didn't have those things, he couldn't do it that way. But I'll say one thing about Brisebois. He's ruthless. He makes hard decisions, and I love that press conference.
Steven Stamkos learned that very well last year.
Yes. Ryan McDonough, you'll remember, and then he went back. That just shows you how much guys want to play there.
Elliot Friedman, Sportsnet NHL insider. He's going to be a very busy man, by the way, during the Hockey Night in Canada broadcast last week. They had a camera on Elliot in a conference room with how many tablets you had open, I don't even know. But you were hard at work, and they gave you a glamour shot during the Hockey Night in Canada broadcast. I got a good laugh out of that.
I got to tell you, Adam, that's the first time me and Glamour Shot have been used in the same sentence.
Well, I'm glad that I could do that for you, Elliot. I know you're a busy man between now and the deadline tomorrow. Thank you so much for taking time to join us.
No worries, guys. Sorry. I was a little distracted at the beginning. It's been a little bit crazy.
I'm sure it is. We will keep your updates front of mind over the next 24 hours. Elliot Friedman joining us from Sportsnet NHL Insider. Brought to you by Old National Bank. Get old. 615-737-1025. We will react to what Elliot had to say. We'll also take your reaction on the Predators trade last night. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025, 1063, the game. D. Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 1025, 1063, the game. Live at Bridgestone Arena. Predators and Kraken tonight at 7. Pregame at 6, right here on 1025, 1063, the game. Thanks to Elliot Friedman for joining us. He is a very busy man. The NHL trade deadline is roughly 24 hours away, 2 p.m. Central.
Uh-oh.
And as Elliot said, for the Predators, be prepared for anything. So we'll see what happens between now and 2 o'clock. But we do have some reaction on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com about the trade the Predators made last night. Again, Tommy Novak and Luke Shen for Michael Bunting and a fourth-round draft pick. One texter says, one texter says, there's 100 Tommy Novaks. Who cares? Some even way more than him. Alrighty then. James says, Shen is too old and slow. We needed to move his contract. Novak is a skilled player that disappears during physical games. Bunting scores more and plays with grit. I love the move. To get Bunting for next year and yet another opportunity to luck out in the draft to get a stud, I love it. Brad on our text line says, I agree with buying out Ryan Johansson, but I would be hard-pressed to come up with another move that Trotz has made that's been a win, and we can argue with that. He seems to be trading away homegrown talent for cast-offs from other teams, some of which were first-round picks. Now, I would say the decision to buy out Matt Duchene was a good one. I know that Matt Duchene has been a successful player with the Dallas Stars, but the key to that has been he's been making far less money in terms of the contract he has with the Stars. He's getting the buyout money from the Predators, and he is a secondary player for the Dallas Stars. He is not paid to be the lead dog, which he was with the Nashville Predators, a role that he is, in my opinion, ill-suited for as an NHL player. So I would throw Matt Duchene in there. I believe the signing of Ryan O'Reilly has been quite good. Now, when they signed him, I thought they signed him for too long, but he has been a good influence in the dressing room. But I understand what Brad is saying, Willie. And you made this, you mentioned
well,
this.
Well, I think also, if you're trying to list wins, I think the Nyquist signing was a win.
The fact that they got a second round pick out of him at the end.
But you got a career year out of him first.
Yeah.
So that was a home run for $3.1 million. You got a first line right wing for $3.1 million and you had 75 points. That's a victory. And then wheeled him for a second round pick.
Yeah, your team just didn't benefit.
Well, you know? The team benefited. They had 99 points last year, mm-hmm. right? I'll take last year every time. I know people don't like losing
in
the first round.
As far as playoffs and advancement and stuff like that.
Yeah, I know everybody wants to win in the playoffs. I think all you can do as a GM is mm-hmm. put a team together. I thought that team came together really well. There's a lot of wins from last year. And then as I think that's just part of the reason to your question earlier, Adam, why did he go all in? Is because I think he knew that there would be regression from guys like Nyquist and other guys who had big years. Mm-hmm. There would be a little bit of a fallback, and you needed to compensate that. That's why they added guys like Stamkos and Marchessault to feel like they could stay at that same level and maybe be better equipped. The other thing that has really jumped, come back to haunt them, we mentioned the Carrier for Barron, the net result right now, is not good for the Predators. It's not even close.
The waving of Dante Favreau.
Right. Favreau was more of a role player. He wasn't clearly in the top six all year. Last year, he was sort of in and out. He never really blended with Brunette, but he's a right shot defenseman who's an NHL guy, right? And you lost him on the waiver wire. That definitely, the net result is not good there. The other one that I think is underrated is just how they got from where they were last year to this year. And only time will tell long-term whether this will be a net win or lose. But the drop-off from Ryan McDonagh and what he gave them last year to what they're getting from Brady Shea this year is night and day. Ryan McDonagh was outstanding for them last year. Brady Shea has struggled from the get-go, right? And this is something that they've got to get fixed because Brady Shea is going to be on the Predators for a long time. That's something that I don't think anybody could see coming in the summer. If you knew that was a big mistake at the time, then more power to you. I thought it made sense, but as it has turned out, it has been something that has dropped off what you're seeing on the ice, right? It's not even close.
Go ahead.
Well, no, I mean, I guess that was it. It's interesting the different things. This was not a blockbuster trade that they made last night, right? You heard Elliot say that. It's an intriguing trade that may, at the end of the day, be sort of a wash. Luke Shen, I would now contend he gave them what they hoped that they would give him. But if they're not going to make the playoffs, they're fine moving off from Luke Shen, and they get out of his contract for next year, which isn't a huge contract. But it is some money that they have a little extra to go and address something else.
Right. To me, again, the headline of this trade, and then we'll continue your reaction. The headline of this trade is that the Predators, after 1 year, remember, it was 1 year ago Tuesday that the Predators re-signed Tommy Novak. So in basically one calendar year, they gave up on him. And again, I commend Barry Trotz for getting out of the contract and, by extension, acknowledging that he made a mistake by signing Tommy Novak to that contract. But again,
was it a mistake? Or because if he had been signed for $6 million, then I would be telling you that that's a huge mistake. But they signed him at a reasonable number. So I think that in and of itself, the day they signed it, I didn't think it was a mistake. It just hasn't worked out, and they have pulled the plug.
The miscalculation was thinking that Tommy Novak could be a consistent second-line center
NHL. Did they think he could be when they signed him to that contract? Or were they
hedging? I don't know the answer to that.
I think they were hedging. I think they were hoping. I think they hoped that there would be a better center that became available so that they could keep him more in the role that he's more suited, I think. And I think they looked around and said, we don't really have a better option here. We've got to throw him into that second line role. And he clearly was in over his head. So if you believe that he is who he is now, then you might like this deal. If you believe that there's another level, he's going to become something that he hasn't, which is what Pittsburgh is rolling the dice on, then you probably think this is a bad move. But they clearly have pulled the plug in 1 year. I'm just pointing out that the investment was reasonable and not overpay, $5 or $6 million. Then I think it would be a big bust.
The other thing that people go back to is what Elliot mentioned with us, that this time last year when Tommy Novak was unsigned, there seemed to be a lot of interest in Tommy Novak. And it sounds like they probably could have gotten more for him than they did in this deal, which
I don't think there's any question.
Clouds people's perception.
But in the moment, when you had all kinds of momentum, you were going to make the playoffs, and Novak was a part of that.
Yeah.
Would you have traded him? I mean, that would have been. What kind of reaction would you have gotten for that at the time?
Bob is in Antioch on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Bob, thank you for calling. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, guys. I have a couple of questions. Number one, on the road trip last week, Brunette mentioned at least once that I saw that there were a lot of passengers during those games, and that alarmed me because that indicated there might be some lack of effort, locker room problems, et cetera. Do you guys think that there is much of that in their locker room? And my second question is, we're in a rebuild. You can call it what you will, but I really think that we're in a rebuild. I'm a very patient person. I hope the fans are. How long do you think it will take them to turn it around? 2 or 3 years? And I'll listen off there.
If I can take a stab at the second question, Willie would be better equipped to answer the first question because he's around the team every day. How long is it going to take? That's a good question. It really depends on the players they signed in free agency last summer. Was this just the season from hell for Steven Stamkos and Jonathan Marchessault and Brady Shea? Or are they starting to show their age? And is Steven Stamkos devolving, for lack of a better term, into a power play specialist who you can expect little to nothing from at 5-on-5? Like, was this the beginning of the end of Steven Stamkos? Or was this just, again, the nightmare scenario? That is the major question to me to determine how long it's going to take them to get back to where we thought they were going to be this season.
Right. And now what you might have an opportunity to do is get a top five pick. And if they have a little luck in the lottery, who knows? It could be 1, 2, or 3, something like that. Right now, if they just stayed in their spot, they would pick 3rd, right? Have I got that right?
I believe that is correct.
So, I mean, they've never, since David Legwon, I think the highest they've ever picked is 4th since then, because they've always been consistently in the playoff picture.
Let me go to my favorite website, tankathon.com. Yeah. We haven't visited tankathon.com. They also do NHL tanking as well, not just the NFL. So the Predators are in the third spot.
So
right
in terms of how long would the rebuild be, right? Barry Trotz is not, he does not, and he has told Jared this very consistently week in, week out. He's not about having the Detroit, Anaheim, Chicago, San Jose types of rebuilds that take 8, 9, 10 years.
Complete strips.
Detroit's sitting there right now going, are we going to miss the playoffs again? Like, they looked pretty good a couple weeks ago. They are right on the bubble. Ottawa hasn't been to the playoffs since they made the Eastern Conference Final in 2017. They're sitting there right now going, are we going to miss the playoffs again? They've done all the things to rebuild and get the high picks and then pay them. And then it takes so long to do that. Barry Trotz doesn't want to do that. He might have the opportunity to get a high pick that does move up faster and maybe help your team quicker than most draft picks do. And Adam, I agree with you 100%. For them to be good in the next couple of years, they have to have a resurgence from the top guys. All of their top guys this year have had subpar years. All of them. Every one of them. And I'm talking about the homegrown guys that have been there for a long time and the new guys. It's a combination of all of them.
615-737-1025. We'll wrap up the show next with a look at what happened in the SEC last night.
Oh, what a night.
Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025-1063, the game. D-Mace, Fingan, and Donick, 1025-1063, the game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. Stillman and Company coming up next on 1025-1063, the game. The Predators are back in action tonight against the Seattle Kraken. Puck drop at 7, pregame at 6, of course, right here on 1025-1063, the game. Before we get out of here, gentlemen, another bananas evening in the SEC. Ole Miss stuns number 4 Tennessee, 78-76. Florida goes on the road, defeats Alabama 99-94.
Now, that was stunning to me. That was more stunning than Ole Miss beating Tennessee to me. The way that Florida basically led wire to wire at Alabama. They were the better team from the start. I don't know about wire to wire. They were up by 2 at the half. The second half, they just...
Yeah, Florida just dominated.
They dominated.
Yeah, Florida just dominated the second half.
And Oklahoma upsets Missouri. Oklahoma wins 96-84 at home. So Joe Lunardi, of course, the expert bracketologist over at ESPN, his update this morning, no surprise. He has Florida moving up to the one line. Tennessee is the top-ranked number 2 seed, followed by Alabama. So my question for you two is this. With Florida's win against Alabama, Tennessee's loss to Ole Miss, what does Tennessee need to do? What has to happen for the Vols to get back on the one line?
Two things have to happen to me because people are losing sight of this. One, I think they do have to win the SEC tournament in order, or at least got to get into the championship
game. I think they need to beat Florida.
Yeah.
If they face Florida, regardless of, I don't know when they would meet based on the standings, but they need to beat Florida.
But then again, that needs to be either in the championship game or the game before the semifinals.
Okay.
That has to happen. And this is what no one's saying right now. Michigan State is still there. Michigan State, if they outright, they've won the Big Ten already. Now, if they go in and win the Big Ten tournament, now they have a strong case for the number one seed.
Your Spartan is showing,
which
Derek.
Be in the West. No, I'm just saying, like,
I hear you.
Because there are a 2 right now, and it depends on what Tennessee and Florida does in their respect in the SEC tournament.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Tennessee and Florida would either have to get in the champion. I think both of them have to get in the championship game in order to secure a number one seed.
The Michigan State thing's an interesting one. It goes down to the philosophical question is, how much does the committee change the seeds based on the conference tournament?
Yeah.
The last few years, it seems like the consensus is they're not weighing it as much as you might think. I think that they should.
Don't
Otherwise,
you think this year
why are we playing these tournaments
don't you think
if it doesn't matter who does well?
But don't you think this year may be a little bit different because of the strength of the Big Ten as well as the SEC?
I think it should.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it should.
No, I do too.
I do think that Tennessee, you would think, just with Florida has won some impressive games now. They have won at Auburn. They have won at Alabama. That is a pair of huge, huge wins on the road, and those road wins carry more weight. Florida is really good. My goodness, they are loaded up and down their roster. Alabama just did not have any answers. And Alabama, the flaws defensively, I think, that is their weakness right now, is they just didn't have any answers. They could not stop Florida on their home court to save their lives. And that more or less happened in the Auburn game as well. So Florida, I think, is a legit one seed. Tennessee, I don't look at them and say that's a clear-cut one seed. And last night was a good example. I thought Tennessee played well.
I thought it
took a lot for Ole Miss to win that game. That one kid went off, that senior. He just made every play down the stretch. And that game easily could have gone the other way. You saw Milicic. Mm-hmm. He throws it up there right as he releases the ball. The red light goes on. It's bouncing around the rim. If he makes that, it's overtime, and Tennessee could still have won the game. They're one rebound away from having that be the winning shot instead of the tying shot. So Tennessee is a tough out for sure. But I still think that they are a little bit hit or miss with their offensive weapons. Mm-hmm. I think they could be stopped offensively.
They don't scare
me as much as Auburn or Florida.
And they proved it last night. And this is, I think this has been sort of a microcosm of sort of who Tennessee is, really. That's why when you look at them, it's like, man, yeah, they can win, but God, I just don't know about them. Because like they have done in games prior, they get into this lull where they're not moving the ball around. They're pounding the ball on the ground. One guy is just pounding and pounding away, dribbling the ball, and they're not running their offense. And then they end up taking an ill-advised bad shot. And they do that more times than not on the offensive side of the ball. Chaz, great in the first half. He was hitting from everywhere. And then all of a sudden, now they can't find him within. He spent a lot of times, I think, in the second half on the wings, mm-hmm. sitting waiting for the ball. And then he'll move. They don't keep their offense flowing the way it needs to. When Tennessee is moving around, passing the ball, they get better shots. They're more of a hard team to cover. The minute they get stagnant, they don't have enough shooters, like legit shooters, or that one legit shooter like they had last year. Love Chaz, but nobody's comparing him in regards to the way he shoots the ball. Nobody's comparing him to Dalton Kennett in that respect. But he is a really good player. But they get stagnant in offense, and if their defense isn't going, they can lose to a 13 or 14 seed in this tournament.
Wow, that would be something if that happened. You would have some Vol Nation issues if they lost a game like that, which is what would happen to anybody. But let's look at their team. D-Mace, I think you're right on. They don't have a big man in the middle that's going to be a real force. They got the one guy, Okpara, that he can catch alley-oops and dunk it. If you leave him open, he's going to dunk it. Mm-hmm. But he's not a skilled guy in the lane, right? You've got Meshack and Ganey. Mm-hmm. A little bit hit or miss. You know, if I'm scouting them, I'm not overly.
Meshack is not a knockdown shooter.
No, neither one of them are. No. They on certain nights, they can hit them, right? But I'm scouting, I'm saying, are those the guys that I have to stop? No. It's about making it tough on Lanier, he gets all his points in the same way. He is a catch and shoot. You can't leave him for a second, right? And he's going to make some shots. He's a great player. But he doesn't beat you in all the different ways. Then there's guys like Milicic, who, again, is a little bit up and down. And then we know what you get from Ziegler. Ziegler's a great player, no doubt about it. But their lineup doesn't scare me like Auburn and Florida, where I look at those rosters and I say, man, how do we stop all these guys?
Or even Alabama, who can score the basketball at an incredibly high level.
And their issue is defense, right? Yes. I think I'm looking at Alabama and saying, I'm going to get mine against them. I can shred their defense.
But they can outscore you.
But, yes, that's the issue with Alabama.
Here's another minor issue, I think, moving forward for UT. Listen, when you're talking about the metrics, I think UT should be one of those teams that has a legitimate shot at winning the national championship.
Because one thing they do, their defense is going to be there every night. They are going to make it tough on you defensively. Absolutely.
But here may end up being, and I saw a little bit of it last night, Zakai Ziegler. He has trouble against length. And he had trouble last night at points in the game, at trying to get his shot. And subsequently, you know, he was able a few times to sort of pass the ball to the perimeter and those guys knocked down a few shots. But if you're going to stop UT, you got to stop Zakai Ziegler. You got to make it hard on him. They were making it very difficult, especially in the second half. They were making it very difficult for Zakai Ziegler to get in the middle of the lane. And once he got there, all these trees are there.
Yep.
And he can't do much of anything. So if you – that's one of the big problems other than the being stagnant. Him having the ball going against length at the guard position.
Yes. That is a great, I think, synopsis of how Tennessee could get beat. How did Vanderbilt beat them?
Yes.
Tyler Tanner did a tremendous job of making Ziegler work. You can't stop Ziegler. He's gonna have the ball. He's going to make plays. They stopped him in Nashville. Didn't stop him. They contained him in Nashville. In Knoxville, Vanderbilt was in position to win that game, but Ziegler took over the game in the second half. If you can make it hard on Ziegler, your chances of beating Tennessee go way up. Easier said than done.
Yeah.
Can't wait for the SEC tournament next week. It'll be right here.
It's going to be fun.
At Bridgestone Arena.
Every game has been so watchable. Like, I have no dog in the hunt when I'm watching Florida or Alabama.
Yeah.
Even Oklahoma against Missouri. These are great games to watch.
Yeah.
Great games.
That'll do it for us today. Predators and Kraken tonight at 7. Pregame at 6. But before then, it's time for Stillman & Company. Coming up next, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Be love. Love on your people. Have a safe, blessed, wonderful Thursday. Peace.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. TNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
This year, experience the NHL playoffs your way. Want to watch a single? Do or die Game 7, a full week of heavy-hitting back-and-forth series. Then check out Sling's 1-3 and 7-day passes. Watch the chase for the cup on ESPN and TNT, starting as low as $4.99. No long-term contracts or overpaying. Just live hockey at home or when you want it. Sling lets you do that. Visit sling.com to learn more.